Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me. Tell me what's wrong.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, I'm up there, Saxon Jacks. I've come out a Ricky on the board. We have S&P futures up 6. As if he's up 104, we were up much more earlier, but that's where we are now. Dow's actually down, Dow futures down 58, but that's probably only one stock, so we will be up. Professor Carl?
Oh, you do.
How are you, bud?
Well, you know, I'm assuming that you saw the news of the day.
Probably. Well, what would be the news of the day for...
The insanity of... the bubble that we currently live in today from the standpoint of the market, and the Grok shall own the world, powered by 1 million satellites in orbit, which shall deliver terawatts of computing power, and it shall all be owned by Elon.
Take over the world. Ian Trump, back together.
Well, there is a small problem with this fantasy. This is Zephyrin Cochran level crazy. Okay, I mean, in terms of what he says he can do versus what he's actually done. Do remember that in 2015, Elon told us that all of his cars, all of his Teslas, were hardware capable of you getting in the back with a six-pack and punching in wherever you wanted to go, and them taking it
It'd
there.
Be a beautiful thing.
Well, and that by 2017, that this was going to be a routine thing, and he was going to prove it by having one of these vehicles navigate on its own without any driver interaction from Los Angeles to New York.
Didn't people used to be able to do that with a horse? Take me home in a little buggy?
Well, you know, and here we are in 2026. We were supposed to have these things, we're going to be all over the place. And yet, here we are in 2026. And then there's this other minor little problem, which is that I get out the pencil. Gee, funny how people really, we used to do that, right?
Before. We used to have pencils, yeah.
Yeah, we used to use pencils, and I just took the amount of solar energy available in orbit, which, by the way, is about 30% more than here on the Earth, because, there's this thing called an atmosphere that absorbs part of the energy on the way down. Never mind that it's not dark.
Well, it's a good thing, so you don't all get sunstroke every time you go outside.
Well, and it's not dark half the time either, yeah. which is the other benefit, right? Because, you can point it at that big flaming ball in the sky. So as it turns out, one gigawatt of solar power requires about 5 square kilometers, which is about 1,200 acres, by the way, if you're, for us landlubber English loving people, about 1,200 acres worth of horizontal space, 5 square kilometers approximately. Now, that's somewhat of a problem, but of course space is very vast. The bigger issue is that the mass of these panels to produce this power is about 10,000 tons. All right.
Pull them out there where you're suburban, no problem.
Well, 10,000, now this is for each gigawatt. Now, he says he's going to have a terawatt of this, right? So each gigawatt
Nobody wants the details, they just want he's going to do it.
Yeah, 10,000 tons. And then, of course, there's the other problem, which is that when you are putting this stuff into space, it's not just about being able to lift it into space. By the way, He's yet to demonstrate that this Starship thing is actually stable enough to do. He claims he's going to be flying 1 an hour, all right, in order to accomplish this.
And the thing's bigger than the Saturn V, right?
Well, he's going to be flying one of these things an hour.
Jealous you don't have what he's smoking.
There's this problem with, there's all sorts of problems with this. I mean, this thing runs on liquid natural gas.
If you're a believer, you just buy Tesla. By the way, it's up 468 this morning as you're talking.
I'm well aware of that. By the way, a few days ago, he announced that they're shutting down two of the lines, the S and the, I think it's the X. That there is no follow-on set of lines, okay? That there is no follow-on. That sales of both the 3 and the Y are down sequential.
He's got his $11 billion in carbon credits.
Yes, and oh, by the way, the Cybertruck is a commercial failure. It's sold less than 10% of its available.
So it's also ugly.
Capacity. Well, it looks like a garbage truck.
Yeah.
But, nobody...
By the way, they roasted it on the... 12 crummy pickup trucks. They said nothing works. The wind is on. They don't know. It's a disaster.
Well, apparently nobody wants one, right? So there you go. But no follow on to this. So here we have in all of these things that he's done, but for being able to force you to buy, to pay him, all right, when you buy something that you want but isn't what he sells. None of them would exist.
Was that an Obama thing, or was that a... That had to be an Obama.
It was an Obama and a Biden thing, yeah.
Yeah.
That we were all going to have... Now, think about this, though, too, Chief. Think about the stranded infrastructure that this whole stupidity has generated. This entire supercharging network, okay, is now stranded capital. Okay, that's a problem.
Yeah.
By
the way, if you're... Having never had one of these things, or now that I even know anybody who has one, actually I do know somebody who has one, but if you fire out on your way to L.A. in one of these things, and you get to mid-Iowa, and you got to pull over and charge, do you have to stay the night? Do you have to have dinner? Do you have to have 3 beers? How long does it take?
It depends on exactly how much charge you want, okay? So with most... Here's some of the things that you deal with is that... all batteries in what they call the bulk phase, up to about 80% of capacity, they take energy quite rapidly. Okay, as they get closer to full, more of that power gets turned into heat, which is very undesirable. Not to mention that you paid for it, but you didn't get anything for it. So you don't want that, right? But what the bottom line is that to kind of stay in the good area of the charge, you're somewhere between an hour to 2 hours.
So you're using 220?
No, not even close. So if you charge off your house using a level 2 charger, which is the 240, that like your dryer runs on.
Okay, right? I said 220. 240,
house,
what's the difference,
You're talking about a 6 to 8 hour charge time.
Okay.
So the chargers that you see, like at the supercharger things, when you see the Tesla signs with the little arch thing and the cords, whatever.
Actually, I've never seen one of those, but.
Well, they're in some places, but like if you go to a Buc-ee's, you'll see a whole rack of them, so you can go and shop at Buc-ee's and charge if you want to. Buc-ee's is a gas station.
Oh, all right.
The
they serve chicken there, like the ones in Indiana.
They serve all sorts of interesting things there. It's a phenomenon that started in Texas. It's weird stuff. We've got one here. It's bizarre, but basically it's a huge gas station. Is the best way to think of it, with a big convenience store associated with it.
I'm sure they got showers. They got everything else for everybody.
It was a Walmart-sized convenience store. No, here's the interesting thing: no trucks, no heavy trucks are allowed.
Really?
And
the
reason for this is they don't want to spend the extra money for the thicker concrete and such that is necessary to handle them. So it is a car and RV only huge gas station with a convenience store associated with it. Anyway, the fast charging is DC based, and it's, I think it's 400 volts.
So this thing is capable of taking either 120, 240, or 440, where that's pretty interesting.
Well, the 400 is DC as opposed to AC as
wow.
well. Okay, so I mean it's the electronics in it are capable of of charging off of pretty much anything. Now, if you actually plugged it in with a with an extension cord, 3 days later you might have a usable amount of power in it.
All right, I get it.
Yeah. So anyway, but the thing is I mean, all of this nonsense has been peddled by this guy, and now the problem that he's got is that Tesla's a public company, right? But XAI is not.
See, now you've got this thing now. You still are fixated in how people used to think. Do you think for a second?
SpaceX and XAI are not public. So basically, the deal is merge these two privately, where we don't have to lift the kimono up and let anybody see any of the internals, and then take the combination public, which is where this is headed, I'm sure.
Or do you think for a second anybody on the board of Tesla even thinks he has to meet for any reason whatsoever?
Somehow this guy has not only managed to steal billions of dollars from the American consumer when they wanted to buy a Chevy as opposed to a Tesla, but in addition to that, he's managed to get the board of Tesla, which is a public company, to give him a pay package that, assuming he hits his metrics, is $1 trillion.
If I would ever have time or the inclination or whatever, Carl, to write a book about what I think might be wrong with America, things that started out correctly and maybe went the wrong way for reasons that nobody thought about.
Yeah.
One of the things I think would be the way the government now is, in the sense of outside influence into what used to be local elections. I don't care which side it's from. The other, I think, is I've thought the board, the idea of having public companies with these boards, has been absolutely useless for 20 years. It isn't on smaller companies, the bigger companies. Do you think anybody who could possibly be a rabble rouser is going to get on the Tesla or Meta or Google board? I mean, come on.
Well, here's one of the things that, I'll tell you where I think part of the problem is, Chief, is that we allow for those shares that are in either a mutual fund or an ETF, we allow the proxy to vote them. We allow the not the beneficial owner of the company, which is the holder of the
those guys never vote. They never vote, or else they always vote management's way, right?
Well, but I'm saying, like, if you own SPY, okay, you own the S&P 500 spiders, right? I mean, that's what you bought.
Right.
All right, you don't get to vote all 500 of the proxies. The managers of SPY vote the proxies.
They actually probably don't vote.
Well, but I'm saying like VTSMX, which is Vanguard's total market index, okay, which is kind of the same thing, right?
Yep.
Or VFINX. If you own one of those mutual funds, which is essentially the same thing as the ETFs, except you get end of day price instead of being able to trade them through the day. If you don't get those proxies for all the stocks in that mutual fund, the management is the voter of
the
share.
Do companies still have the idea that if you don't vote, it's a vote for management? I remember it used to be like that.
Well, it's the majority of the votes cast, right? So
I think way back in the day, if a vote wasn't cast, it went for management.
Well, it might as well be.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But I mean, the thing is
what I'm saying, it's totally non-functional.
Yeah, it has, and part of it, this is one of the side effects of the full of the whole. You know, there's an ETF for that thing, right? You know, how many different spiders are there? How many sectors and, you know, whatever, right?
I think there's 11.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, and then you've got how many mutual funds and, you know.
There's more mutual funds than there are stocks.
Yeah. So, I mean, but the thing is that it used to be, back before all of this, back before the 401ks, everything else, if I wanted to own IBM, I had to buy IBM, okay? And being the beneficial owner of IBM, I got the proxy, and I was able to vote the proxy.
Do you think anybody under the age of 50, when they buy a stock, even has any whiff whatsoever that they're a voting member?
Well, I still get a few of them, and I read them.
I know, but you're
I vote them too. But you
you're
know
somewhat
what?
Now. We like you, so you're unusual.
Oh, thank you.
But if we didn't, you might be peculiar, you know, type of thing. Did you just read all this stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I just look at this and it's like, all I'm looking at from a standpoint of this is what is all of this? Okay, I mean, if you think about Tesla, it's a car company, right? Or is it a solar energy company?
It's Elon Musk.
Or is it an energy buffering company?
It's storage, you're voting for one
storage
guy.
Converters. Or is it an energy electrical charging company? Or is it a humanoid robot company? Or is it an AI company? Or is it a taxi rideshare?
You're betting on
company?
A guy to take you wherever you need to go.
You know, what happens? And this is this,
by the way, I'm not
is,
arguing. I'm just telling you what the truth is.
Not, I mean, well, I understand that, but here's the problem: all these things he said he was going to do, he hadn't done any of them.
You can't ever go by there. If you like the dude, he's a genius.
Oh, my God. You know,
I've had this conversation with people. You
Chief,
can't.
Chief, between this and the Palantir, did you see the Palantir op-ed dude, the CTO that got.
I see the stack is up 17 bucks. I don't know if that's good for us, though. So.
Well, but on Fox News, right?
Okay, well, I didn't.
Well, it was posted over there, okay? And it's basically. You mopes all have AI wrong. It's going to be a huge productivity. By the way, Elon has hit what his view of AI is that you don't have to save for retirement if you're 30, because AI is going to bring such an age of abundance you won't have to work.
Yeah, well.
Now, you know, it somehow, now juxtaposed against this.
Did you listen to... what was the name of the firm? I forget yesterday. I'm going brain dead. Who's the outfit that charts all these layoffs for somebody? Yesterday, the guy said that 66% of the companies have laid people off because AI don't even have AI.
Right. Well, because that's not really what they're doing.
Yeah.
Okay. But then here's the this is juxtaposed against the other data that comes out, which of course is all these layoffs, right? And then at the same time, the trade deficit, you know, remember, we weren't going to have one because of tariffs, right? We're going to force all the production back in the United States. Okay. China's trade deficit, our trade deficit with China was a record last year, right? But bet you a bunch of people that listen to the
show
didn't
know that. Who
can you
listen to least, the president or Elon?
Well,
it's a tie.
It gets better, okay? The way that this happened is that China transshipped all their stuff through places like Vietnam, which didn't get hit with the tariffs, all right, to the degree that they did. And the way that they did all of this and shifted all of this is through forced labor, which is a nice way of saying slavery.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
So now we still have the same crap that was, which I've been raising hell about for 20 years with wage, which, you know, the answer to this is wage and environmental parity tariffs, right? Of course, nobody wants to go there because then if you try to transship, you get hammered, all right, as a result of doing it. You get caught and you get hammered.
It's like pollution. The people who pollute are cheaper than the guys who aren't, you know?
Well, just put it over there in China. Nobody cares, right? All of a sudden, we're green. We're all good, right?
Put it in the other side of the Rio Grande, not our side.
Well, okay, and oh, by the way, in my wonderful state, in Nashville, they still have people that after this ice storm have no power. Now, the reason they have no power is because the electric company there, which of course is a captive monopoly, so you really don't have any choice, right, like everywhere else, decided that trees are very beautiful, and they are so beautiful, and the canopy is so important that we can't cut down the ones that are hanging over the top of power lines.
That's not too smart.
Well, and oh, by the way, the woman who runs the joint that was appointed to run this place has zero utility operating experience prior to getting the job. But boy, she's all in on DEI and being green and green energy and this and that and the other thing. It's 5 degrees out, and you got no power and therefore no heat. And oh, by the way, the government over there tried, thank God for the legislature of the state that stopped it, to prevent you from having anything other than electrical for heating. No gas, no gas for cooking, no gas for furnaces. No. No more of that. If your unit that you have now fails.
Did New York ever go through with that?
Well, they were talking about doing it too. I don't know if they are.
But hey, what is the...
But by the way, with a little $300 gas generator, if you've got a gas furnace, you can plug it in and you've got heat.
Oh, yeah. Hey,
with a heat pump.
Do you southern creatures have kind of weird kinds of trees down there that are kind of weenies? That Audrey was telling me about her friends from Florida were saying they have some trees that because it's so cold, the tree is freezing, and the branch is breaking off and it's going down. What the hell kind of tree is that?
It's not the tree... The branch is freezing. What it is that when you get an ice storm, the load on the tree branch is 3 tons.
Yeah,
it's all the frozen water that's the problem.
Are you guys melting at all yet or no?
We're reasonably okay here. Nashville got hammered, and it just depends. You know, we got about 6 or 7 inches of snow, but most of it's gone. But not too far from here, there were plenty of places that got a foot. The problem with that is that the general rule is about 10 to 1, right? So if you have an inch of rain, that's 10 inches of snow.
Did you go out and buy a snow shovel, or were you like hell that didn't think it would be worth it because it was never going to snow again?
Oh, I have a snow. No. Hal actually bought into that BS?
No, he wouldn't buy one.
Oh, I was going to say, I didn't think I thought he was a little smarter than that. No, I
haven't. he was using a rake.
Well, I have a snow shovel, but I used it. But the I think there is a fairly decent chance, just and this is just based upon looking at sunspot cycle data and stuff like this, that we are headed for possibly the start of a maunder minimum kind of situation. God forbid if we are, because the last one of those. Those are centuries long. Okay, they're not something that's 5 years in.
So we're not going to be able to see us come out of it.
Well, we won't live through it, and our children won't live through it. But the big problem is if you take 2 or 3 weeks off the growing season on both sides for Canada, their agriculture is essentially finished.
Well, so is our northern stuff too.
Well, and so is our northern stuff, right? So I mean, there's the impact of this, the last one of these, it was quite a long time ago, okay, but it was in, the human experience, so to speak.
I thought we had one when, same time as the Revolutionary War.
No, that was the Little Ice Age.
Yeah, okay.
That was much less severe, okay. The Maunder Minimum coincided with the plague and Black Death and famine and like a half.
I thought
of
that was caused by an asteroid.
No. That's way before that. The one that killed the dinosaurs was.
No, I'm talking about the one in 19 in like 4 something A.D.
Well, this ran from about 1,080 to about 1,400.
What was the one where the guy wrote the book Catastrophe?
Oh, I don't remember.
But it was essentially.
Yeah. Well, it's these kinds of. But
it was
cycles.
It was the plague because I remember reading the chapter about the different temperatures. The guy went through like in this one chapter, Carl, even you wouldn't want to read it. It had to go through 50 different rat species.
Yeah.
And how the plague was buried somewhere in Africa, And it caused that rat species, they have to go another 1,000 yards where they infected the next rat species, and it finally made it to the coast, and it jumped on a couple of ships to Europe, and that's how the plague got to Europe. And it had all to do with this. And he went through, you know, I told you the story. I'll take a second here. It's interesting, I think. But he's one of these guys that evidently in UK at the time, one of the coolest things they have for, I'll use the term coffee table, is a big, huge tree sawed like half an inch thick. You know, the trunk on the side.
Right.
So the guy's sitting there having many cocktails, and he's looking at this tree trunk, finally gets out a magnifying glass, and he counts back the rings, and he finds a spot where the rings are like real close together for like 10 or 20 years.
Yeah.
And he goes, finds a bunch more of these, and I forget the dates, but the book is out there. I thought it was right about when the Muslim religion started.
Yeah, it's fascinating stuff. Yeah,
and he said, well, every... Then he went back and looked at the history, which is really hard to do, of a lot of places that didn't have any cat. And he found that in the steppes of Russia, the people who had horses always kicked ass on the people who had cattle.
Right.
And all of a sudden, they didn't.
Right.
And then all the castles, the King Arthur's group, that were always built... You know, essentially on the plains, were now being built next to where there's a water body where they could catch fish. All this stuff started to happen all at the same time.
Yeah.
So the British Army actually helped them out, and they found some massive crater somewhere in the southern Pacific somewhere that they think caught, or was it an eruption, some volcano?
Well, it was a volcanic thing. Yeah.
But it cooled the planet off for. Was it like 20 years, 25 years or something?
Yeah,
Because the water kept pouring in the volcano, and the stuff just kept pouring up before it stopped. But anyway, it's just absolutely fascinating about the changes that took place.
Oh, yeah, and you know, that's the thing, though, Chief, is that when you look at the, you know, when you look at the things that have, you know, have gone on in situations like this, you have to... I assure you that neither the Maunder Minimum nor that, nor the Little Ice Age, were caused by you driving your Suburban.
No.
Okay. I assure you that that is not the reason it happened, and yet we have been, you know, humans have been looking at and recording solar cycles for a very long time, because that huge ass flaming ball in the sky is, you know, the whole reason that all of us are here, and. These cycles overlap, and we only know some of them with specificity. So the 7-year cycle is one that we understand fairly well, but the longer period ones we don't. And simply because, you know, yeah, we've been keeping track of them, but the guy that's doing it, he didn't live long enough to do a whole cycle, right? So, I mean, yeah, so there's stuff like that. And this is one of the things that, if we are entering into this, and the last couple of 7-year cycles have both been light, contrary to popular belief, black things radiate more heat than light-colored things. You know, people think it's the other way around. It's not. If that is in fact the case, then we're in the start of one of these. Now,
don't have Joel yet, do we?
No, we won't know for another 10 or 20 years, which, of course, by which point it's too late to plan for.
In case Joel pops out, let me ask you this question. And to a certain extent, weather does create its own weather. I mean, the reason why it's cold is because it was cold enough that now everybody's covered in snow that it isn't normally, so the sun radiation does not cause as much effect as it normally would.
The albedo is higher. It's white as opposed to dark.
But now we had some people, some young ladies. Well, the young lady I remember because she was ahead of the thing. People from China. They've changed their weather around so much by turning the area near Beijing from essentially grassland into desert.
Right.
That's never coming back.
I think if you
burn down the rainforest in Brazil, it wouldn't come back.
Well, Chief, you know, you got to be careful here because the planet has undergone an awful lot of crazy stuff, right? I mean, there's a huge crater in the Gulf of America, Gulf of Mexico, whatever, that is probably from the
You mean the Gulf of Trump?
Yeah, the Gulf of Trump, where, you know, that's from the impact of the, you know, of the asteroid that likely took out the dinosaurs, right?
We didn't like those guys anyway.
Well, yeah, they were, you know, the T-Rex was really nasty, and every time he got pissed off, he ate someone.
Yep.
So, but the thing is that there are a lot of, just like is with all life, you have hundreds, if not thousands, of buffering reactions within your body that all have to stay within a very narrow band or you die. And yet, they do. Okay, the planet has the same kind of buffering reactions. I've every time somebody starts with this global warming nonsense, I've told them, I've said, look, I just have one that I want you to give me the actual chemical equation with the energy terms for. This is the carbonate buffering in the oceans, because there is more carbon dioxide sequestered in carbonate in the ocean than there is in the atmosphere.
My buddy who worked for NOAA retired.
No, by the way, nobody has that formula.
He thought that the carbon dioxide problem, he agrees with you, is not on land, it's in the ocean.
Well, but nobody has that carbonate reaction, okay? And without it, you can't possibly figure out which way things are going.
And he claims that your coral reefs and all those kinds of things are very, very sensitive.
But it's one of, yeah, but the thing is, it's one of thousands, and yet the planet has correct, it does have a balancing mechanism, it has balancing mechanisms, because if it hadn't, any of these other things that had happened would have killed everything on it many, many millions of years ago, and it didn't happen. We're all here.
Well, so. Yeah, but the dinosaurs aren't. We don't want to be the next dinosaurs.
Well, yeah.
I think to a certain extent you can create. I think China has caused a serious problem with an area that was not that arid, now is. But I don't see how you get it to come back.
And we're not going to do anything about it, are we?
I don't. We're not, and could you, I guess, is the question.
Well,
I don't think you could create a rainforest. I mean, didn't the Sahara Desert used to be a rainforest?
No, but what we could do is we could. Well, you look at all the people that are screaming about the grasslands in America, right? The reality of it is that having animals, large animals, graze on them is the most productive way to utilize that land, whether you like it or not, because it's dispersed. It is not chemical intensive, and yet they fertilize and turn it over with their, you know, as they stomp on the ground, they turn it over, and ultimately this brings more grass and makes the land healthy. And when we, in our attempt to get rid of the people that were living here, we shot all the buffalo.
All right, well, if Joel doesn't pile in, why don't we?
Joel is up, and
okay.
Unfortunately I cannot hang around today. So,
all right.
But I'll definitely. Although no jobs report Friday, so we can talk about whatever.
Why is that?
The shutdown.
Shutdown.
It's been announced.
Oh,
no jobs report on Friday.
These guys can use everything they possibly can to give us no information.
Look, Trump hasn't gotten around to cooking it to suit himself, and he hasn't talked to Elon about what he wants to say yet either. That's what it is.
Oh, God. All right, Joel, how are you, buddy?
Good. I the Buffalo talk to the Elon talk. I don't know where I fit in here, Chief.
You fit in with what's going on with the market, the gold. What is with Bitcoin? If Bitcoin drops under 20,000, is it a problem or not?
I was thinking about that just last night, and I don't think so. I don't think it's bad if it goes down another 20,000. Look what the market did yesterday, right? And wouldn't it be deflationary? Think about all that excess money that was created by Bitcoin out of thin air with no fundamental value. So to me, it's an anti-inflationary thing, and I think that that's good. Don't ask me why gold's up 6% or silver's up 8.5% while this declining. But that's my hot take on it.
Well, the last couple of weeks, we've been trying, not been beaten on it too bad, but Larissa kind of started us. I'm trying to figure out what exactly are the risks of some of these numbers change, so we say. I mean, what if, the market drops 20, 30, 40% where some people think it belongs? I'm not saying I'm in that group, but you look at some of the valuations of some of these stocks, you look at them and you go, boy, they could be a lot less, and I'm still not sure they're a huge buy. But Bitcoin, Russell had it when it was at its top, He thought there was $3 trillion worth of wealth in all these cryptos. Well, now we're down to under 2, right? Because everything's down about 30-40%. You know, I'm just coming from the top, not when people bought it, but from the top.
Yeah.
Now, if that were to drop to 1, I mean, $1 trillion out of somebody's pocket leaves a mark someplace. Is that some kind of a margin loan? Does somebody have to sell something else to make up for it? I mean, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is, but I don't think it's nothing either.
I don't think too many people. I mean, the Bitcoin futures at the Merck are fully margined, and on these Coinbase, I can't speak for everything, but I mean, if there is margin on some of these things, they blow you out in a heartbeat.
I'm talking about the people who have the some people took out mortgages to buy this stuff. I mean, you never really know where people.
Well, they also obviously don't listen to stocks and jocks or pre-market and prep.
Well, probably. So I would say you're right about that.
If someone makes that kind of investment decision to do you know one person that did that?
Yeah.
You don't know anybody that did that.
I do.
You do?
Well, we have Nancy and Audrey on every week, and Nancy does mortgages. And some people took second mortgages out to buy Bitcoin. But I'm not going to name anybody, and she's not going to either, but...
Audrey's your girlfriend, right?
Yep, and Nancy's one of her best buds. And one of mine, too. Wow. She's a great lady.
When did that happen, man? That would have been Chief, you don't give me good market signals. When did that happen?
Well, a while ago. The guy's done fine. In fact, he bought it at like 65. Bitcoin.
And he didn't sell it when it got to 120.
I don't know if she talks to you anymore.
You don't give investment advice.
Oh God, no. No, but I'm saying, do you think nobody sells this stuff?
Well, someone's selling cheap.
Yeah, someone is now.
130K to come. All right, enough Bitcoin. What else you want?
No, I'm just saying what are the risks if all of a sudden I mean, it's not like it's a subject that isn't out there. I mean, silver went from 112 to 75 in one day, or 2 days. So it's not like these corrections aren't there. A big article today on CNBC. What does? I'll give you the whole. I'll do it right if I'm going to say it. What was it? Gold silver prices. Let's see. Gold and silver rebound. It basically had to do with the fact that these things are moving 10 and 20% a day. What does it mean for the market? Is it a sign of weakness? Is it a sign of strength? I mean, what is it? And that's the question we're trying to. Is it something we should be concerned about? Not concerned about? You appear to be not.
That's something moving every day, Chief. There's pockets of weakness everywhere. There's every day. I can look today. I can find a stock.
Well, you know that the other day was. You know, a one lot would have been in the silver future at the Merck?
$50,000?
150. 5,000 ounces.
Well, that's right. Well,
that's a number. Why weren't we short like two or three of those things?
Hey, you don't have to talk me into anything. But this real quick, I mean, what do you like better? I got to do one level, then we are running behind on pre-market prep and stock trader. What do you like better, SLV or GLD?
SLV, what's the other one?
What are your clients in more, silver or gold?
We actually are in the gold miners, GDX.
I'm just going to
We have more people in the gold.
And more people than the gold?
Yeah, than we do in silver.
All right, let me see if I could do something quick for you, just because you're such a good friend of mine, and a friend of pre-market prep, and a... Wow, that is not a big move at all when you look on the weekly. I mean, that's hardly... That's nary a pullback if you look at the weekly. Let me give you a number. You know how Dennis likes one number on pre-market prep? I would say it's very important for GLD to get back to 465. I'm not going to tell you why, but the longer it takes to get back to more 465... And I think there's going to be more downside pressure. How's that for one level?
I think you're probably right. What are you somewhat stunned of the volatility in the silver? I mean, silver kind of always, to me, it was like something that trailed along with gold, and now all of a sudden.
Yeah. No. You know, it's fun to follow.
Yeah.
I don't have any of it. I wish I did. Just crazy. Just watching the prints and that just makes your head spin. So it's fun to follow. Difficult to trade. If you are good trading at it, go at it. But, I mean, and also just another quick note. I mean, both the silver, the DLD was a little tricky, but the SLV for you SLV traders in there, it put in a nice double bottom there, right at the $70 level.
So really?
If you're watching the SLV, keep an eye on 70. But I just want to say thanks, Chief, for having me on, and I always appreciate you coming on to Stock Trader Network. If you folks want to come over to Stock Trader Network, we're real active from 9 to 10:30, bunch of stuff during the day, and also from 3:30 to 5. One of the best closing shows, earnings, movers, after-hour news, content you will not be able to get else anywhere on Wall Street.
Since the market's open, those guys are way more into the actual trading than we are at Stocks and Jacks because we're before the opening. So to go over there afterward is really a good idea.
9 to 10:30, that's when the big boys like Chief come in and put in their institutional orders.
There you go. Thanks, buddy.
All right.
Do we have Kenny?
Blue, talk to you now. We didn't even get to talk Michigan hoops. Beat Nebraska last week and Michigan State. Got a tough run coming at. We're at Purdue, at Illinois. We play Duke on a neutral site. I'd like to win two out of those three, and I think we get a
Where's the neutral site? That'd be a cool game.
Okay. All right,
where are you playing Duke? Where's the neutral site?
D.C.
Oh, really? Well, that'd be fun. Yep. All right, take care, buddy.
Go below.
Do we have Kenny?
No Kenny yet. We have Haldo.
Oh, we got Hal. Well, that's good.
Hey, what's up?
How are you?
Just looked at the MT Weekly, the weekly M2 numbers. It exploded, dude. It exploded.
Okay. Well,
inflation is not bottled up.
What week are you talking about? Because they're not doing...
They just released it last night at 2 in the morning. I woke up at 2 or 3 in the morning, and I checked it.
Well, what week
is
it?
And it exploded. Huh?
What week is it? It's not this week.
I have it right here. Hang on a second. I just tweeted all this stuff.
I know, but it's not this week. They don't give the weekly numbers out.
Well, they didn't give this week, but they released their latest numbers.
Okay, because they
look... And it does not look good.
Right.
They released December... Let me go to the bottom here. I just tweeted all this stuff. They went through January 5th. They just released about 4 weeks worth of data, and it popped. It popped. M2's up 14.1% from the previous month, and it's up 5% from the previous year. It bent my quadratic trend upward, so now I'm expecting, if that trend persists, I'm expecting inflation to be...
All right, so I'm looking at M2 here. The last I have is December... It's December of 2025. It came out January 27th.
Oh, no, I have it. I have it this morning.
I know, but how, they stopped.
I mean, I have it January 5th.
Right, they stopped giving out the weeklies. How are you getting them?
I have it. I don't know why. It's in my Google. I look at it so much that when I type M2, it pops up. The series pops up. But yeah, they have it updated through January 5th.
Who's the they? I'm looking at the Fred doesn't have it. Where are you getting it from?
Fred.
All right.
I can send you the link.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah, I'll send you the link. But when I type,
but you're still not getting. You're still not getting last week like you used to get.
No. This is the most up to date. I got it at 3 o'clock in the morning when I woke up. I just thought I'd look at it. I'm like, holy! It went like vertical.
Is that it's not a year end thing? You can still.
No, it's not a year end thing. It's just they roll out every once in a while. They roll out 4 or 5 weeks worth of data, and they just updated it last night at 2 or 3 in the morning.
All right, I know. I don't want to keep going, but I know that you can get the weeklies, but they're the same month that they give you the monthlies.
Yeah, well, this is the series is called WM2NS, non-seasonally adjusted.
Oh, okay.
I don't want the seasonal adjusted.
All right, so send me the link, please, and that way I'd love to get into it. Yeah. Yeah, it's well, I mean, that's why you can't. Kevin sent me the numbers yesterday that the ISM is looking better.
Yeah,
and I. You know,
well, what good thing
is there? Is there no deflator on that or anything? I mean, if these guys are doing what you're saying they're doing, none of these numbers matter, do they?
Yeah. Well, there is one good thing: the commercial and industrial lending that kind of rose a little bit. It's starting to accelerate, so maybe. But most of the gains in lending are going to non-financial depository institutions. Non-depository financial institutions.
What does that mean?
Well, it's probably all those hedge funds. It's probably the hedge funds, the investor class that buys up real estate. a small group of people.
Okay.
That's where it's going. It's not going into consumer loans.
It's not going to market. It's not stock market loans either, right?
Well, I think what's going on is I think this money ends up somehow in the stock market, because I just looked at FINRA margin debt, and we have it going up. So we have, like, I don't know, 7 consecutive months of over $1 trillion in margin debt.
Yeah, that's pretty high.
Yeah, so I think that's where all that... The lending that's going on in these major banks is going to people, institutions, individuals who are buying assets on credit. And I think... I wonder if a lot of this is a gold and silver play, too. I mean, if you think Bitcoin... if you think Bitcoin's going to crash, what are you going to do if you believe inflation's a problem? And I think inflation's a problem. You're going to put it in gold and silver.
Well, you know, it's well, I'll explain to the listeners what we're talking about so we're not over everybody's head. But if you come to PTI or Merrill Lynch, notice how both in the same sentence, Phil, you're going to, if you want to buy the GLD, you know, which is the gold ETF, or if you want to buy IBM or JP Morgan or whatever it is, if you want to buy $300,000 worth of stock, you have to send us a check for $150,000. So that is actually a margin loan, right? So it's
yeah.
But if you go to the CME, Chicago Mercantile Exchange, and want to buy a future, a gold future or a silver future, you put down a good faith deposit. There's no loan there. Nobody pays cash for the future. You just buy it and put the thing down. There's no cash for it. You're just long it. Whoever sold it to is short it. Nobody has to pay the other guy for the IBM stock. So the speculation on the future side is not the same as what you and I are talking about margin loans. The margin loans for December are $1.25 trillion, which is up $11 billion from the month before, which is up $30 billion from the month before. I mean, it's going up every single month, like you say. It's up $200 billion since July, which is a massive increase, right?
Yeah.
But now this on the futures side, it's not equivalent. You know, you can say what the open interest is. If the open interest goes up a lot bigger, you can see, you know, maybe somebody's doing something. But for every buyer, there's a seller, right? So. But it's no. If I go and buy a silver future on the CME today, I don't pay cash for it. I put a margin down. We actually don't call it margin down. I call it a good faith deposit. So it's the FINRA debt is strictly on the stocks, because you actually do have to pay for them. Somebody has to pay for them. You can borrow half of it to buy them, right?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I just
well,
I know you know what I'm talking about. I'm just explaining.
I'm not a big investor, and. The Federal Reserve's database doesn't give you a lot of information on where, I mean, what people use these non-depository financial institution loans for. But when you see margin debt at, what, 7 consecutive prints above $1 trillion and rising,
yeah,
and you see non-depository financial institution lending up, what, 34% since December 2025?
Well, last year
yeah.
It was $899, so we're up $325 billion. And it's up basically 30% in 1 year. That's incredible.
And that's exactly what FINRA, or not FINRA, non-depository financial institution lending is up by, about 34%.
Non-depository
that
means...
That isn't a coincidence.
Non-depository means not banks, right?
Yeah, not banks, yeah. Yeah.
Well, but actually you do, I mean, I'm not 100% genius on this, but if you were to call it, like, we don't have anybody really does this. I mean, we have people that have margin, I'm stuff on margin, but if you actually wanted to call us to buy 1,000 shares of IBM at $315.50 and said, what's the minimum check I could send you? Like I said, we don't have people like this usually. The answer is what, $160, whatever. 157 something. Somebody, RBC, is now taking that money, or IB, whoever you did it, is actually going to prefigurate the stock and send it to a bank, and they will actually get the money from the bank. So the loan actually does come from a bank. So I don't know if that's considered non-depository. Maybe it's because it's...
Well, you got that. You got the bank making that loan, and then where does that money get deposited eventually? That's the kind of thing.
Well,
I'm
it goes to the guy.
I don't play in this space. I'm just noticing
what ends up happening. The money goes to the guy who sold you the stock. It's his.
Yeah. Well, I mean, does it go to an intermediary who then makes these margin loans? Because I've never bought anything on margin.
I don't.
I'm not a player in this. All I'm doing is I'm just.
Well, I don't know how. I mean, if it's Morgan Stanley and they quote are a bank.
Yeah.
They might be doing both.
Yeah.
But I know when we cleared through Mesro, now RBC is owned by World Bank of Canada. So they might be doing both as well. But now Mesro would always go, they had a bank line, they would go right to the bank. Some of the stuff you could do internally. And that's where brokerage firms make their a lot of their money. I mean, if that's why always every PTI is not that big, you know, in the world of brokerage firms. But we're always in huge demand because we're like the only firm on earth that has positive cash. Because we don't...
That's great. I love
that. That's because... Well, when I say because... So I think that RBC can pay people here whatever they're paying them on their cash deposits, and I think they can loan the money out somebody else for like a lot more dough. So yeah. That's why we're very valued. But in general, brokerage firms make their money on the interest.
Yeah,
I mean, not on, and they get paid for order flow, and they make money on the interest, because you know if you're paying them on a margin loan, you're probably paying 6-7, yet if the money in your account, you're getting 1-3, so that's where the money is in the brokerage business.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, the money lending isn't really in real estate. It's not in consumer loans. It's not in automobile loans. It's not in commercial and industrial loans.
A lot of it's in automobile. A lot of it's in automobile repair. It's in automobile repair, I bet you.
Yeah, those loans are only increasing by 3-6%. So if you factor out inflation, they're not really growing at all. And that's why you don't see employment. That's why people are having a hard time finding work, is because these banks are faced with these rules. The capital requirements and liquidity requirements that encourage them to make loans only to the most creditworthy of billionaires and Wall Street types. That's where these loans are going to. And then what do those guys use that money they just borrowed to do? Well, they use that to buy a variety of assets. It's not going to employers. It's not going to operational loans. It's not going to farmers, right? It's not going to the people who employ us. It's going to Wall Street institutions, it looks like, or maybe even K Street institutions.
Well, I'm looking right at the number right here. The total credit card debt is $1.3 trillion. That's a lot.
I think part of that credit card debt are these small businesses, the startups, or who need, when business slows a little bit, they dip into that credit card. They're not getting bank loans. I think they're using their credit card. So I think a lot of this credit card debt are probably small businesses who are not able to get business loans anymore.
Which is horrible.
Oh, yeah. If they don't pay off that debt at the end of the month, man, it's bad news. But if they can pay it off, that's great. But when business is slow, they're not going to be able to pay that off. And now they got a balance that's going to accumulate at 20-25% a year.
Well, they used to have I'm surprised at this thing. I'm looking at the debt clock.
Tom, this is a really sick financial institution. What we have is really sick.
Oh, yeah?
It is. Whether by design or not, I don't think it even matters anymore. But whether by design or not, what is it doing? It's giving all the money to the biggest corporations, and it's forcing small businesses to do what? Finance at really high rates relative the corporate
factor. If you can.
Tom, I sound like I'm in Antifa, but I'm not. I'm the opposite.
Well, you know,
I'm a libertarian.
For some reason, I mean, we have a lot of people on the show, and I don't think I'm in the middle on the politics. And you know, I'm not in the middle on personalities. I mean, I get that part, but in terms of economics, and by the way,
we all have very unique personalities. That's for sure.
But I'm saying, but you guys. You guys collectively have taught me
the two Utes.
You guys collectively have taught me to look at the numbers on a longer period of time. And when
well,
you
Tom, that's the nature of your business. You want to look at things.
You know what I'm saying? This is what you.
What do I want to do today, right?
Well, this is what
while I'm looking at things over a long period of time.
But I mean,
there's going to be ups and downs in the short run.
Where I'm going with this.
But over the long run, things are going to get better generally, as long as policy is not as bad as it is right now. Policy is really bad, especially banking policy and monetary policy.
Okay, what I'm trying to utter here is that there was a time when I was like more of a lot of people, where you'd look at the policy of whoever was in government, and you look at the Fed policy, and I would critique it on a monthly or yearly basis.
Yeah.
Sort of like virtually everybody still does, right? But to be honest, and I'll give you kudos, or you've made my life miserable. You and Carl and Russell to more than he knows. Carl probably more than anybody. Because whenever we talk to stuff, the things he sent me to, the data sets, instead of being 2 or 3 years, were always like 20 years.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he did it on purpose, but all of a sudden I started charting back the whole 20 or 25 years. And I'm looking at these numbers. Even if it's oil production, whatever it is, everybody tries to make this huge thing about one party's doing this, one party's doing it. In fact, you look at the numbers, you almost can't tell when one person walked in and the other person walked out.
Yeah, I don't think there's much difference between Trump's first term and Obama's second term. There's not much difference.
Well, what I'm saying is, what you're saying...
There's not much difference between Obama and Bush.
I'm trying to agree with you, and it's very hard to do. Yeah. What you're saying is, over a long period of time, there's been banking relations, Dodd-Frank, there's been this and that and the other thing. And at the end of the day, at the end of the 20-year period, we've got credit card rates that are higher than they were when we started, even though the interest rates are way lower for most people. We've had people that have been able to borrow for a long period of time under the inflation rate.
And
I think you're the one who said, you and Carl said, when that happens, you got a real problem in terms of some people are going this way and most people are going the other way. And you know what? I don't really give a rat's ass who's in office. This has been happening for 25 years. And neither side has either recognized it or maybe they promoted it. Whatever it is, I mean, the reason why a baseball team is worth, $90 bazillion is because they were able to borrow money at 2% when the thing was going up 10% a year. Where the rest of us are borrowing money at 22%, and we're the part that goes over the fence last. Isn't that what you're saying?
Exactly. It's the Cantillon effect.
Yeah.
People have to rediscover Cantillon. Cantillon was one of the greats, man. He didn't write much, but, man, he was spot on. He was the Michael Blurry of his day. He saw John Law, the first European central banker, creating a housing bubble called the Mississippi Bubble. And he was saying, hey, you're creating a bubble. And John Law is basically saying, hey, be quiet, or I'm going to cut off your head. I'm going to have the king cut off your head. So Richard Cantillon, he's not going short. He's going long. He sells before the bubble burst, and he ends up in Italy. He escapes the bubble bursting, the Mississippi bubble bursting in the 1700s. So people got to pay attention to Richard Cantillon. He doesn't have a formal education. He didn't have one. He grew up poor. But he was just a really smart guy that was exposed to business early on, and his experiences in the military and he gave him opportunities in international banking, international finance. And this is the Cantillon effect. Who gets the lent money first? It's not us. It's a very small group of people who are using it to buy stocks, Bitcoin, gold, and silver on the margin, or even real estate. Man, real estate lending is so difficult. I'm trying to get I have this huge amount of equity in a property in Utah, and it's a rental property, and I can't find a lender to give me a little bit of, money on my equity. I can't find any lender to do that.
Not if you tell them it's a rental.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Well, hey, I don't want to be like Trump and Letitia James. I'm not lying here. If they ask me a question, I tell them the truth, and that's probably the problem. I'm telling them the truth.
Well, the thing of it is, why? I mean, these laws are laws for a bank. Where can I start with this? They decided to help these banks out by telling them who you can't give loans to. But a bank should have some bad loans, shouldn't they?
Well, they're going to have bad loans. That's I mean, that's part of the reason why they collect interest.
I understand
that,
but
cover
you,
those losses.
You don't want a bank to have no bad loans.
Yeah.
I mean, because
well, that's what the banking rules do, though. They encourage banks to do what? Only have good loans on their books. So they're not able to finance that new business. They're not able to give a successful business, you know, a little help to bridge them through a rough patch. So they're only given loans, it looks like to me, just to the most creditworthy of creditworthy. Because
not,
that's how
not,
the capital
not,
and liquidity requirements are set up.
It's not creditworthy either. It's somebody else's definition.
Yeah.
I'll give the quick example. One of the two guys. One used to trade for me. Nice guy. Boy, he hit the hell out of a softball. And the other dude was a broker for one of the firms on the floor. Good buddy, client. We used to play a lot of golf together, and he had a group of people that played every Saturday, and then a couple of guys died or something. But I was always on call, so I played like one or two Saturdays a month, which is perfect. I didn't want to play all four. Anyway, these two guys go in the, and they got some dough, so they go in the house remodeling business. So they buy some house, and you know, it's not the world's greatest neighborhood, but they buy the house, totally fix it up to where it appraises, you know, like 165, 170. This is going back 15 years. And they put a renter in there, you know, probably Section 8 or whatever. They keep the place clean. It's doing fine. They do a second house. They do a third house. Finally, they've got like five houses. And the appraised value of the five houses is, you know, $1.4 million, you know, at least. And they've got them all rented, and rents are coming in, and they've got some cash in the bank. And they say, well, we've got four or five of these houses. We ought to be able to get a loan for the next house for $80,000 or whatever we're paying for it, and we shouldn't have to pony up the dough. Oh, no. We want the mortgage, or we want a guarantee on both of your houses that you live in. We want this and that, the other thing. We want, you know, your grandfather to sign it. And they're going, what are you talking about? We've got $1.4 million in equity. We've never missed a payment. And everything else is paid off in these places. There's no mortgages in any of them. You're telling me you can't loan us $60,000? Oh, no friggin' way. Now, if you're BlackRock, you're blowing through house after house, right?
Yeah, rich people don't buy things with cash, because if you buy things with cash and the asset only goes up 10%, you only gain 10%.
Yeah.
But if the more leverage you use, if you're using 1% cash and the asset goes up 10%, you can get a return of 500%. So rich people are not going to use cash to buy stuff. Elon Musk did not use cash to buy Twitter. He cobbled up a bunch of loans to buy Twitter.
Yeah.
So they're not using cash to buy. They have cash. They have lots of cash, a lot more than I do. But
here's my concern, and I don't know. Well, I have a lot of concerns, but you and I, if we own the Hallen Chief Bank, we look at that particular loan as a gimme. Lending these two guys $70,000 when they got $1.4 million. Yeah. Where's the problem here?
Yeah,
I mean we don't even have that one on a scale of 1 to 10. We got that one as a 9. And yet, somebody made a rule saying, oh, no, you can't do that. Who's the somebody? I mean, who's the somebody?
I'd like to know, because the rules really changed in March of 2020. That's when they really changed.
When was Dodd-Frank?
Dodd-Frank was like 2012.
All right, so those guys.
Dodd-Frank really changed the rules for people wanting to build a real estate business where you have, like, say, 10 rental properties. And what you do is you buy a house, you live in it for a couple of years. You fix it up, then you turn it to rental property, and then you use that to buy a new house. And the next thing you know, you got 20 houses. Dodd-Frank really snuffed that out. And a lot of people think Dodd-Frank was, this is just my opinion, but a lot of people think Dodd-Frank was designed to, you know, ensure that the markets don't fail like they did, you know, a few years earlier. But in my opinion, Dodd-Frank was set up as a cartelizing regulation.
It's sold as
consumer protection.
What it did was, it stopped the banks that were a little more aggressive than the other ones from competing with the other ones.
Well, that's how it sold. But in reality, what it did is it said, you're not going to be able to enter this market.
That's what I thought I just said. You can't.
Yeah. You are not going to become a real estate mogul. You're out of the game.
Well, plus
we're going to skew the rules so much that you can't enter this market.
Well, plus the stuff about having to send your you know, if they look, they want to look at your bank account for the last 20 years, and if your father gave you, you know, a $10,000 gift thing 2 years ago, you got to give him to sign an affidavit that not really. Hey, screw that! You got the what do they care? You got the money. I mean, when I bought my house in Beverly, God,
it's all cartelizing, Tom. Yep, that's what the point is. It's all cartelizing.
Plus,
cartelizes these industries into these monopolies that are protected.
Well,
by the state.
Well, simple stuff. I mean, you would always tell somebody. I mean, I only bought a couple places, right? So it's not. I mean, I'm big on this stuff. Robin and I bought a few places when Robin was still alive, and we remodeled them. And Robin always said, "Hey, let's make sure we bring $300-$400 to the closing." And I go, "Why?" She goes, "Well, somebody adds something wrong. We don't want to blow the deal. We just want to hand the guy $100 and say, now we're even." Well, you can't do that anymore. Mm-hmm. You can't do that. You got to wire the money in. Why? Why can't I give the guy $100?
Yeah.
Who thinks of that? Who thinks of that? Is that the wiring companies?
What this is just another layer of regulation that keeps people from jumping into this space. The people that are successful in this space don't want competition. If you look at the TV show Flipping Vegas, it was my favorite flipping.
I thought you were going to say Sanford and Son, since the poor guy just died.
Oh, I love Sanford and Son. Yeah. That was so funny. You know that his cousin? She was actually pretty young, but they made her look older. Sanford's cousin.
Oh, okay.
The two that bickered. She was actually much younger. And they kind of did a thing where they made her less attractive. And they made her look older.
Is he the one who was always telling her how ugly she was?
Yeah. They actually made her look less attractive on purpose, and they made her look older so she would look as old as Sanford.
I always like the line, "One man's treasure is another man's junk."
Well, you know, Sanford and Son was the inspiration for eBay, right?
Yeah, pretty much. I thought that show was absolutely a riot. I mean, the poor kid, he was long suffering, wouldn't you say? He's the guy who just died. What's his name?
He was in the middle of that, man.
He was absolutely in the middle of the whole mess. But so you couldn't put those shows on today. Kind of humor, nobody.
No, you can't. And the Jeffersons was one of my all time favorites from the 70s.
Why have people lost their sense of humor?
I don't know. You know, one thing I thought was interesting about the Jeffersons. I grew up in Idaho, and I remember, you know, the Wilsons. They had two kids, right?
Yeah.
One that passed as white, one that passed as black. And the white kid, the one that passes white, appeared in the show only twice. And I remembered that to this day. And at the time when I was a kid, I was like, why do people care? I mean, they're brother and sister. But it explored that dynamic that I didn't really understand until I married my wife, who, you know, is a black American, Haitian descent. I didn't really understand that dynamic at all. But, yeah, it's a fascinating.
I know a couple people here in Chicago who will go nameless.
Maybe that's why I'm married to a black woman, because I thought the Wilsons were awesome.
Well, I mean, I think she's probably a very nice lady, and she's the only one to put up with you. So there's two reasons.
Yeah. Oh no, she's always in a good mood, and I'm moody. I go up and down a lot. I don't know what it is, but I'm moody, and she's always in a good mood.
Well, you know,
it's irritating, Tom, that she's always in a good mood.
What are you doing in a good mood?
We gotta be up and down. We gotta be sad and mad.
I you know a couple of people in Chicago that I think are either are not at all African American or maybe a part that have really done well in the minority business set aside, shall we say?
Yeah,
they aren't even really whatever. Takes all kinds, shall we say? So what? I want to ask you kind of my theme here. I'm asking everybody, obviously. Joel's response was like, "It's never going to happen. Everybody's okay," pretty much. When I looked at the silver drop last Friday, looked at it, watched it, and Hal, I the week before when it was expiration day, silver was trading 100. This is SLV ETF now, it's trading $112. And we got some people in there, and I go, you know, Dan, we don't usually do this, but you know this. This is really looking toppy. I don't sit around and make you know speculative trades for my clients, but most of them actually don't mind if I do and wish I'd do more, assuming they work, right? So I buy these puts at 21 cents expire that day, which I never normally do. So they trade a buck, buck and a half, like instantly. Then they come flying down. And I go, all right, let's just sell them. So we sell them for like 60 cents. You know, so we make 39, 40 cents in half hour. You know, it's better than a sharp stick in the eye. Well, then they go to $3. And then they go back down and they close it like a dollar. So I go, all I would have had to do is go downstairs for a beer. I'd have done a lot. But you know, you that's not what you think. So those things, as of yesterday, they'd have been $38. Mm. Not those, because they expired, but we're talking about $150,000 on a one lot of the futures. And we're talking 30% move in something. Now, was it too high? Yeah, it was a speculative run-up. I get that part. So my question now is, to all the guests that come from all kinds of different walks of life, and I started this with Larissa last week, and hopefully she'll be on tomorrow, but she teaches a class at Purdue on essentially risk management. Now, so my question to everybody is, you know, I just mentioned to Joel, what if the Bitcoin, which was 120, is now 77, what if it's 40, and another $1 trillion of wealth is out of that bucket of wealth? What's it going to affect? Who's it going to affect? Is it going to affect anybody? Because I don't think you lose $1 trillion and nobody have a hole in their pocket. I mean, somebody does. I mean, it's always amazing when something like that happens. I mean, like the 2008 fiasco. There were German banks that were all over these mortgages that I didn't even know existed. And how the hell they got involved in U.S. mortgages, I have no idea. But people find a way, don't they? So, I mean, I mean, I don't know where the next $1 trillion, if there is such a thing, in the Bitcoin, you know, who's behind is that coming out of? And is it going to affect the market? Is it going to affect real estate values? I mean, if the market drops 40%, does that mean we're going to pay $3 million less for the left fielder in the next go-around? Or does it mean that the baseball team is now worth $3 trillion instead of $5 trillion? I mean, someplace, somewhere, this has an effect. The question is where? And I'm trying
to... Bitcoin is a real interesting thing because you can use it to buy stuff. You can use it to... I mean, you can use it to pretty much buy anything as long as you find somebody who's willing to accept it for payment. And it is an inflation hedge, just like gold and silver. But gold and silver have industrial uses.
You can look at your gold or your silver sitting in front of you.
Yeah. You can, yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, either...
Well, if you grew up in this digital age, right? If you grew up in this digital age, I think you probably look at Bitcoin just as like you do silver. I mean, we don't. We grew up at a time when we had a big, long, 30-foot-long spiral cord hooked to our phone. But if you grew up in the cell phone age, you know, Bitcoin probably looks a lot like gold and silver.
Well, it might, but it's not.
I know it's not to us, right? It's not to us. I like owning something. Like, I like owning a car. A lot of young people, they're just not interested in cars. I mean, I was obsessed with a car when I was 12.
You lived
13,
in Idaho.
14, 15.
You lived What's in Idaho. Time? You lived in Idaho.
Well, I know. I was telling my brother.
Pogo stick to get around in Idaho?
Yeah, I was telling my brother in New York. You just don't understand why you need a car so bad in rural Idaho. My neighbor was, I don't know, 2 miles away. The school was 10 miles away. Town was 12 miles away. There was 20 miles between a town of 100 people and a town of 200 people. And the nearest movie theater was, I don't know, 30 miles away, and it had one screen. And the nearest rock concert was probably 80 miles away. So you had to have a car if you wanted to do anything.
Well,
if you had a car, if you drove your mom's car, you were cool. But if you had your own muscle car, then you were the...
Oh, you were hot.
Oh, yeah. If you had a muscle car... Right, and it was yours, and you owned it, and you fixed it up in the auto shop at the high school. You were King Cobra on campus.
Well, if somebody, I mean, I'm naked without my truck. I mean, I've always had, I got my driver's license on my 16th birthday. But if somebody said,
well, and I know you can get your driver's license at 14.
Really? Well, that doesn't surprise me.
And you can drive. You can drive all you want on the farm. I was driving tractors, little dirt bikes, trail bikes. The pickup truck, I was driving that stuff when I was 10, 11.
Well, somebody, 12. You know, somebody said, hey, come on out to, you know, New York. We need somebody to help with our huge portfolio for a month. We'll get you a place to live, and I could still do Stocks and Jacks and my stuff at PTI. No way on earth I'd want to car in New York for a month.
Oh, you don't want to take it there. There's no place to park it.
Well, I mean, everywhere I want to go, I just walk or take a cab or subway. What do I need a car for?
Yeah, you jump on the subway. There's no place to park. There's just absolutely no place to park.
The guys I knew there that had a car, they used to like to go skiing on the weekends. They used to park it at the end of the subway run.
Yeah.
And they take the subway out there and go.
Yeah, you know, there's double parking, there's triple parking, there's parking in front of hydrants. There's just no place to park.
Well, so don't
own a car in New York.
Well, let's get back to my question. One of the things that I've noticed, and people who aren't in the industry think, and it goes back to the tulip craze. If you and I and everybody else just bid on baseball cards, and baseball cards went from, you know, $50 a card on average to $5,000 on average, and back to 50. And everybody paid cash. You know, the guy that sold at the top is going to do better than the guy who bought at the top. But by and large, there's nothing really forced anywhere, right? Because there's no leverage. But if you look at what happened in the tulips, people aren't researching this, but people remember there's a tulip craze in the 1600s and a huge thing. Well, if you go through the fine print, Al, when people were just buying tulips and the prices were running up, there wasn't a whole lot of risk except to the people in the transaction. All of a sudden, tulips started getting listed on whatever were the Dutch stock exchanges at the time. And oh, by the way, they now became marginable, where you could borrow money to buy your tulip. That's when the whole thing fell apart.
Mm.
And because all of a sudden, on the way down, it wasn't just, hey, I paid $2,000 for the tulip, and now it's trading for $1,000. Oops. Now I owed the $1,000, and I had to sell it.
Yeah, I wonder how much of the sell-off in Bitcoin has to do with the people who maybe have bought it with a second mortgage.
Well, I think if you went to one of them,
or a credit card,
I think you wanted to pay off
those debts.
There's all kinds of people that will lend you money to buy Bitcoin now.
I wonder if they got tired of paying all that interest and they just decided to cash out.
What I'm saying is, I think these places that do like the Robin Hoods of the world and so forth, I think you can get margin for buying Bitcoin.
Well, you can actually, I think you can go on Coinbase.
That's what I meant.
Yeah, you can go on Coinbase.
They'll lend you money for it. I don't know if it's 50% like
stocks.
Well,
you can use your credit card to buy it.
Well, that's another thing, yeah. But I'm saying, if you use your credit card, that's not a forced sale. I mean, give me an example. If somebody, I mentioned a thing, or if somebody were to call us and say, I want to buy 1,000 shares of IBM and I want to send you the minimum amount I can. Okay, we don't have anybody like that. I mean, I don't think we do. I would know. You got to come up with 50%. But now on the security side, not on the future side, not in other places, that's your initial margin. Your maintenance margin is only 30. So if IBM were to drop from 315 exactly where it is now, and you gave us the exact minimum, which would be 157,500, okay, I can still add and subtract. If it went down to 314, my brother's not calling you, dunning you for the $500, because your maintenance margin is only 30. Mm. But now, if IBM, if I did the math, I won't do that in my head, but if IBM were to drop to, say, 285 or 280 to where now your margin, your equity is only 30%, the next buck, we're going to call you and say, hey, you got to come up with some more money or you got to start selling some of the stock. So, and if you say, I don't have any more money, we're going to sell it for you. Not all of it, but maybe 100 shares. Then if it goes down some more, it's another 100 shares. So there's a forced sale there because of the margin stuff. That's what causes stuff to crash. Otherwise, if everything was just paid for by cash, there's no force. There's no firm selling out for you at the bottom type of thing.
Yeah.
So
that can explain it too. Yeah, definitely.
That's the difference. And whenever you see, like, I didn't pay any attention to Bitcoin being a risk until people started to be able to borrow against it, and not just the mortgage part. Because nobody cares about
that. Oh, it was a big risk because it was created by Federal Reserve policy. All these people jump in there because they're trying to hedge against inflation.
But I'm saying
it was a major risk.
The risk was to you.
Yeah.
The risk wasn't to other people because now all of a sudden you need to be a forced seller.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a huge difference there. I mean, I know you know that. I mean, there's a big difference between you sending us the check for the $315,000. And if it's dropped 25 hours, you go, that's fine. I like it better down here. I'm just sitting on it. That's a lot different than me saying, hey, well, that's cool, but send us $5,000, right?
Yeah.
Or if you don't, we're selling it. correct? I mean, that's where the danger is. It's the forced selling.
Yeah.
Now, on the futures side, it's just the opposite. If you put up, I don't know what the margin is for the silver, but say it's 25 grand, just went up, so it's probably used 25 grand. If you put up 25 grand and all of a sudden it's 5,000 ounces and it drops $1, you better send me another 5 grand. Because now your equity is only 20, right? The margin's still 25 on the futures side. That's the way it was before the crash of 29. Your margin, your maintenance and your initial margin were the same. So if your stock went down, you got the phone call that day. And after the crash of 29 is when the Federal Reserve came in with this, you got a sliding scale, that the maintenance margin is less than the other. So if you have one down day, everybody doesn't get the phone call.
Yeah.
But on the future side, that's not how that works. And on the Bitcoin side, I don't know how that works. I mean, we don't do Bitcoin. So, I mean, it's the people who are forced to sell. I mean, why do you think people who bought IBM at 315, and I'm not predicting this, if all of a sudden it's, you know, 220 next week and there's nothing but sellers? You think the people who bought it at 315 and paid full cash for it are anxious to sell it at 220 when they liked it at 315? They're selling it because they have to, not because they want to.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't get
into it that much, honestly.
So did I help you with that explanation or no?
Yeah, I've never worked in the financial industry. I mean, I always thought about maybe doing it when I was a kid. I thought it'd be really fun to work on Wall Street and be in the pits, because I watched, you know, Trading Places, and I thought it was a lot of fun.
10 years, all I'm going to tell you is buy the dip.
Yeah,
that's been the strategy now for how long, and it's worked.
Well, yeah, that's what I've kind of thought is, if the news can't get any worse, that's when you want to buy. If the news can't get any better and it's starting to bend upward, it's probably a sign that you need to sell.
Well, if you have, we had a client, and he's got to be long dead. We didn't kill him. No, we didn't kill him. Well, the guy left the country. He expatriated, and because he didn't like Clinton. And actually, he was probably given this story before, but I'll be brief with it. He was absolutely paranoid about estate taxes. And because the way the government does that, I mean, they're total assholes when it comes to it. I mean, I don't usually use that term. But if they come to your house and appraise your stuff, they want the check for their appraised value. If you go to an estate sale and sell the stuff for a third of what they told you was worth, they still want their money.
Yeah, yeah.
So this guy particularly, he'd moved to Arizona, and he befriended his wife. His wife was the nicest lady on earth. She befriended this young Indian artist, Native American. She was giving him dough and so forth. And the guy keeps, you know, giving her sculptures or paintings. And all of a sudden, I mean, this stuff is really good. I mean, I don't know anything about art, but I'm looking at it going, it's pretty damn good. And it turns out, the guy ends up now gets a real name for himself, to the point where he's hot as an artist. And they've got 25 pieces of the guy's stuff. So,
wow.
So this guy's paranoid that some IRS knucklehead's going to come in and go, well, that's worth a quarter mil. That's worth a quarter mil. And they didn't pay anything for him, right? Or they gave the guy food, maybe an allowance. And they would say, well, you got 40 of them. That's 30 mil. We want a check for 10 or something like that.
Yeah.
And he didn't want any of that stuff to happen. Plus, he hated Clinton, very, very rock-rib Republican. I think I was the only Democrat at the time and never allowed in his house. For some reason, he liked me. I don't know, but he did. And here's one you'll love. He lived his house in the middle of this big, I don't know how many acres he had, you know, but like a lot. And it was just grass. And he had flood irrigation rights in Arizona. Not a drop of water is wasted. You can't turn a sprinkler on because they don't want it.
Oh, no, you can't. Yeah.
Everything's flood irrigation. So you can turn on your flood stuff and you can give your field an inch of water, or an inch or inch and a half, like a week, and the grass would grow up pretty high. We had a guy came by with a bunch of sheep, and he got a dime a day for the guy grazing the sheep on his grass until there was no more grass, and he'd move on to the next place. Then he'd reflood it. Well, then one day he goes, I got all these acres. I might as well build a bunch of houses on them. So he builds all these gorgeous houses and sells them for like a lot of dough. Anyway, he's quite the character. But my where I'm just a long talk about a long story, don't tell it. He, if you are, have a lot of money and you only make like one or two trades a year, I'm going to say even an orangutan should make dough, because you wait to the absolute extremes. I mean, you wait till silver gets to 112 and you go.
This, yeah, when the news can't get worse.
Yeah,
or better.
You know,
if it can't get any better. So, yeah.
I mean, the huge recession that was in, I knew the guy, it was probably 1992 or 3. We had that recession in the late 80s, right?
Yeah.
And he, you couldn't build, nobody built a golf course, nobody built a house. Finally, Arizona is getting a little bit better, right? And a couple guys start building golf courses. Well, nobody's got any equipment. So his son goes to an auction in California, and California is not turned around yet, right? And the thing of the auction was, now get a load of this. If you bid on, what do you call this big, huge thing? We used to call them road graders, the big, huge knife blade underneath the thing. That's
yeah.
Road grader is not the name for it, but whatever, a scraper, whatever they call those things. If you bid,
I think it probably depends on which part of the country you're from.
Probably. But if you bid on one of them and you win the first
one. We call it a grader.
Yeah, same thing. I mean, it moves dirt around and evens stuff out. If you bought the first one, you got to buy four more at the same price. So the guy, the first one, he gets so cheap, he goes, I'll take four more. He hauls them back to Arizona and leases
them.
That
couldn't have been expensive. That couldn't have been cheap.
But as soon as, get a load of this. One guy loses one of them on his mountain pass, and the thing goes over the side into a canyon, and he wrecks it. It turns out the thing is insured for, like, full value, which is way more than the guy paid for it. So he made money. But he gets it back to Arizona. He leases them to this guy who's building a new golf course. He can't find him out there. The guy pays him more per month for the thing than he paid for it. So the idea is, if you just can sit around and every decade make a couple of trades or two, they're usually pretty good.
Yeah.
He bought
hard assets. You know, I love hard assets. You know, that's what I love. And if I had the money, I'd be like trying to do what that guy was doing. Well, I think it's just great. I mean, real estate.
He thought the market, 1987, yeah. He thought the market was way too high, right? So he's all out of the market for like 2 years, and he missed some of the up move. And all of a sudden, the crash comes, the 87 crash, which, you know, took a chunk out of my hide. And he shows up on Tuesday morning at his brokerage firm with donuts and coffee for everybody. And they go, what are you doing there? He goes, I'm here to buy some stock. The guy goes, we just crashed. He goes, I know, that's why I'm here.
Exactly.
So he bought like 10 stocks on the opening that morning and left before noon. He made an average of $9 a share. And
wow.
It was the first trade he'd made in 5 years.
Huh. Wow. Just so, waiting for the opportunity.
But I mean, there's something to be said for that. And so my question again is, what if we get some kind of a correct? We've seen, I think, what we've talked about in terms of the people who, I mean, I think if the market goes down 30-40%, which some people would say that's a start in some of these prices. Not all, but some. You could say, I mean, if you look at, NVIDIA, if it was 140, would you be shocked, given their ratios, instead of 187? I mean, I'm not saying that it's high price. I'm not saying sell it, but if it was 140 and you looked at historical numbers, would you say it's ridiculously low? I'd say no.
Well, right? I think it depends on how far you go back in time.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Like, young people today probably think 6% interest is high compared to what it was, you know, 5 years ago. But if your time horizon is, you know, 30 or 40 years, you're like, well, interest rates are actually probably too low compared to what they were in the 1980s. So it just depends on your time horizon.
Well, I mean, what if the thing that pushed me into this a little bit, Hal, I'm sorry I'm grilling you on this, but that's what economists do, is if this happens, what else happens, right? I mean, isn't that what we're supposed to do? I'm going to break here for a second. We're not supposed to do that, but there was a thing today about this Super Bowl, or not Super Bowl, some of the soccer events. World Cup, people are charging $600 to park.
Now, to Mike, park?
Yeah, now we're going to go to break here. But now, if again, I'm just doing what ifs, and that's what people or a combination of economists and cost accountants do. What if this happens? I'm going to say, I'll ask you, don't go to break. If the market drops 40%, Again, not predicting that and not hoping. Does somebody's offer for $20 million to play right field gets taken off the table? Does some club thinking, I got three or four firms that aren't going to buy the Skybox this year? Or maybe my 20% rise in ticket prices? What are the ramifications? And I think the answer is not none. A lot of people will say, what do you mean? It won't bother anybody. Yeah, it will. You start pulling that kind of wealth out of the mess. Anyway, S&P futures up 15, NASDAQ futures up 133. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom. I'm Ricky on the board. S&P futures up 17 now. We're moving on up. NASDAQ futures up 144. Dow futures down 16. Let me see where that is. We got Salesforce down almost $4. That could be part of it. We got Apple down $1.44. Everything else is up a little bit. But I guess it's down because of the, again, $4 is pushing 25 or 28 in the Dow. It's got like a multiplier, it's almost 7. Over in Europe, these guys were up yesterday, everybody else is down. DAX up 56. I mean, they were up in the morning, everybody else is down. We ended up on the day. By the way, that was a 300-point move in the NASDAQ from when we were doing the show to the end of the day. We're not even looking at stuff like that anymore. It's a massive move. DAX up 56.2%, FTSE down 71.7%, CAC around down 15.2%. So slow day over in Europe. Asia, these guys are down pretty heavy yesterday. They're back up today. Nikkei up 2,000, 3.9%. Wow. Record high. Hang Seng up 59.2%. They were down a lot more than that yesterday. Shanghai's up 51. I think they were down more than that. But Japan, record high. We're on an all-time high. Where's Rita Coolidge when we need her? 10-year, 4.29 up 1, but been pretty steady in this 10-year. Bund up 3 base points, 2.89. Oil, it's been moving around on 62.44. It's higher than it has been. It wasn't as high as the 65 when we were arguing Iran. I always argue with somebody. Evidently now it's cooled off a little bit, so oil went back down yesterday. Now it's up a little bit. Brent up 20 cents, 68.50. You have to read the news to see where all this is happening. Gold, up $306, 49.59. Silver up $11, 88.37. That's a 15% move in silver. I mean, this is crazy, as they say. Foreign exchange, dollar still at 118, euro at 118, so it's pretty steady. Same thing with the pound, 136.7. Crypto up $85, 78,238, but it's just getting hammered. And Ethereum is really getting whacked more so than the Bitcoin. Ricky, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
Good morning, Chief. It's currently 7:37 a.m. here in Chicago. We're looking at 25 degrees right now with a high of 28. A couple of morning flurries today, otherwise cloudy and chilly. Watch out for some freezing drizzle, and tonight will be low clouds and a flurry or two late at night with a low of 19 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 55 degrees right now with a high of 80. Warm with times of clouds and sun. Tonight, mainly clear with a low of 51. Traffic in Chicago real quick. There's heavy congestion on both sides of Kennedy and Edens due to some earlier accidents in like the past couple of hours. There's 35 minutes inbound from Montrose and 57 minutes inbound from Lane Cook. Another earlier accident on westbound on Eisenhower is causing some heavy traffic in both directions as well. And we're looking at 39 minutes on Stevenson inbound from 24. Lastly, some slow traffic on the ramp to inbound Dan Ryan. Sports real quick. Today we got the Pro Bowl game, NFC versus AFC, at 7 p.m. at Moscone Center in San Francisco. Yesterday, the Blackhawks beat Sharks 6-3. They're now 22-25-9 and number 6 on Central Division. Lastly, for the NBA, the Bulls are visiting Bucks today at 7 p.m. That's all for you guys. Back to you.
So you had a chance to stew on it. How is this stuff all interrelated? By we now have the silver is up, you know, you say 15%. Those kinds of movements, Al, have some people, I've never been a real proponent of this, some people will say that that's a sign that the whole market fabric is wobbling, these kinds of moves. And
Well, the Fed has created bubbles. All this bank lending has created bubbles. So we have, I mean, you look at the housing, it's a bubble.
Yeah.
The home price index, no matter which one you look at, it looks, it makes the 2008 housing bubble look like a molehill. So, I mean, all this is monetary inflation, plain and simple.
What
the,
I did a study in 2008 regarding people's, I didn't do the study. I had an article, and I presented the study on the air about an article that somebody wrote regarding median house prices versus median salaries, and the conclusion was 85% of the population could not afford the median house.
Yeah.
If you did the same calculation today, I'd say it's way worse. Not even close.
Yeah,
not definitely. Even close.
Yeah. And I, yeah, the central bank has created all kinds of bubbles everywhere. You know, when you brought up the World Cup, we have the World Cup this year, and I'm not really following sports. I mean, I'm going to watch the Super Bowl.
Did you see?
I haven't watched the NBA game all year.
You see the cartoon regarding your buddy, our president, when
on South Park?
Well, no, but, no, this was on a little.
Oh, you're talking about like a newspaper cartoon?
Actually, it was a YouTube cartoon where they evidently our first game is against El Salvador. And the headline was, I'd put your money on the U.S., and all of a sudden they showed a bus with all the El Salvador guys getting off, and all the all the ICE guys arresting them all.
Well, El Salvador actually used to be a murder capital of the world, but I hear El Salvador is actually pretty safe.
Well, if the idea, if we arrest all their guys, we're probably going to win at least that game. But anyway,
well, you know, South Park has been pretty brutal to the president, I think.
When is, I mean, none of those games are in Chicago.
Chicago got dissed. Like, I think most of them are in like Boston, L.A., New York City.
Well, how many are in?
But you look at the ticket prices. My goodness, man.
Well, a lot of them are in. How many are in Mexico and Canada versus here?
I think there's one in Mexico City. And then, there's Guadalajara?
Yeah, I think there's more than one down there.
There's one in, I think there's one in, there's two in Canada, Toronto and Vancouver. You look at Vancouver, the ticket prices are really nothing compared to, like, L.A. and New York City. In New York City, the final ticket prices are, like, for the finals, like, anywhere from $2,000 to $6,400.
Somebody was saying that this morning they were saying a preferred parking spot at the Super Bowl is like $9,000 or something.
Yeah. Well, my buddy went to the Raiders Super Bowl game back in, 2004 when they were in the Super Bowl?
Thought you were going to say like Super Bowl IV or something, or Super Bowl II.
2004. And I think him and his brother paid $14 each for the ticket. And at the time I thought, man, I don't even know how you can even justify buying those tickets, you know.
Plus, the game
now,
takes forever.
Yeah.
I mean, why do you want to sit there?
Yeah.
If you
the Rose Bowl was great. I went to the Rose Bowl that year with my roommate Dell, and I think we only spent like $100 a ticket, and then we drove the whole way. We drove from basically Pullman, Washington, to L.A. That is a brutal drive. It's like driving from It's like driving from Toronto to Miami, man. It's just crazy how long that drive was.
Well, I've been to a lot of, let's see, how many national championship games was I? Well, I went to the Cotton Bowl.
Did you drive from Chicago?
Oh yeah, we did.
Oh wow!
We had five of us in my F-85. Off we went. And then we went to. I saw the national championship game in Arizona. We went there. We just bought tickets. Guys walking around holding them up, you know.
Yeah.
I never had a problem getting a ticket because people always couldn't go at the last minute. It's back when you actually had tickets, you could buy them from somebody.
Yeah.
I mean, now I don't want to get my phone.
That's why I say Bitcoin to a young person of the day. You know, they buy a ticket, it's on their phone. They buy Bitcoin, it's on their phone. They buy gold, it's on their phone. Right.
You know what? Yeah. I want my own ticket. It's just me.
Yeah. The ticket itself is impressive, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm saying
having a Rose Bowl ticket from 2003. The physical ticket looks
good.
Yeah.
Well, but what
I was saying about the World Cup, I wonder if a lot of the Bitcoin movement has to do with people using their Bitcoin to buy these tickets for the the World Cup. I wonder if that has something to do with it.
I think, and Carol talked about it, there was a wobble. How's that for a description? There was a wobble in one of the, quote, exchanges. And there were, and where somebody hacked into one of the Bitcoin exchanges or something. I don't know if the level of trust that nobody can ever get in there is the same as it was a year ago. Something's fishy going on there.
Well, when you get these supercomputers, I mean, quantum computers make the computers that we know of today look like mechanical calculating machines. The quantum computers that are coming with the power that are going to be supplied to them, they're going to be able to crunch things that we can't even imagine. It's going to make going from the computers that they used in the 1940s to like today. I think it's going to be even more dramatic than that when the leap is to quantum computing. Because now instead of ones and zeros, two possible choices, there's like infinite many like essentially ones and zeros in quantum computing. It's going to be off the charts, unreal. So I think it's going to be really difficult to safeguard.
But it's only going to be as far as anybody's imagination can take it. But I think this whole premise, you know, and we've had people on the show that, of course,
there's always been thieves, and you know, no matter how good you make the encryption, there's always going to be somebody that's going to be able to crack it. There's always going to be guys that can crack it.
Well,
there always has, and there always will.
Funny you should mention that, because I was listening to this thing on YouTube yesterday. I mean, everybody knows I'm pretty much always been an interest in World War II, and how all of a sudden the Allies started kicking ass on the Germans and in submarine warfare. And Admiral Dönitz, who was head of the Kriegsmarine, actually had a special audience with Hitler. He said, "It looks to me like these guys have broken our code. No way else could they be doing this."
Yeah.
And Hitler and all his put a big study out there, and they said, "Nah, no way anybody could." And in fact, they had.
Yeah. Hitler also underestimated Ford's ability to make, what was Ford making during the war? Tanks or something?
B-24s and B-17s.
Yeah, B-24s, that's right. And people are telling Hitler, Ford can make, I don't know, thousands of them when we can only make one.
Yeah.
The war's over at that point. When Ford started making the bombers on their assembly lines, just cranking them out, he just laughed it off. And that's the problem of being siloed and only having yes people around you, and that's why you have to have conversations with people who disagree with you.
Well, there was we must have saw the same thing I did, because it was a few days ago, and they were saying that when did German generals knew they lost the war, and there was somehow they gotten a hold of a production schedule for the was a big massive Ford plant in what the hell's the name of the place? Not Something Island or whatever it was. I'll think of it. And they showed a picture and how they had produced like 15 B-24s that week or something.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
And they go look at it and go, "We got no chance, guys." I mean,
they're producing one, and the Americans are producing like 15 times that, right? It's just a crazy number.
Yeah. And what if there is some kind of a hit somewhere where, I mean, because the reason why this stuff is kind of right in front of your eyes, I mean, I have never seen, companies have gotten taken over and something, people have gone out. To be honest with you, I've never seen two stocks in the same year have the same sort of movement as this Qualcomm, not Qualcomm, which one am I talking about? Oracle, and Oracle's one I'm looking at. You look at the chart, this thing was we're talking this year now. And the stock is now 156. In September, it was 328. These guys were the cat's meow. They were going to get TikTok. Trump's kid was all involved with Ellison's kid, and the future was so bright for these guys. You had to wear shades, right?
Yep.
Stock is down $175.
Hmm.
And at the same time, Micron, which I've always watched Micron, because Micron during the 2000s was $120. Went down.
Well, Micron is an Idaho company. They had their big plant in Boise.
But they've gone up and down so many times in the last 25 years, it's kind of scary. Now, September, these guys were 119, and now they're 444. So if you'd have bought 100 shares of Micron and sold 100 shares of Oracle, anybody would have thought you were an absolute idiot.
Yeah.
You would now be up.
It would have been me too.
You'd be up $47,000 on 100 shares.
Yeah.
And I don't have any idea. Are these guys going to make that much money?
I think investors today, there's probably two groups of investors. There's investors that are the traditional style, and they're the investors who kind of like think of buying stocks as like gambling in Vegas. One is a group. So you have investors, and you have speculators, and with the Federal Reserve, the central bank printing all this money, and banks making even more of it through lending.
We also have momentum traders. I'm buying it because it's going up. I don't know what they do.
Yeah, I think that you got speculators, investors, and I think in the past probably more investors and speculators, but today, man, people can speculate on these things in a lot of different platforms, and so investing or speculating has been democratized. Well, and so you see, when that thing bends upward. And there's all this exuberance when that thing bends upward and the inflection point is increasing and increasing rate. I think people see that and they just kind of jump off and they try to find the next thing. So I think that's what's really driving a lot of stuff is there's a lot of speculation going on. Well, a lot more than there was.
I'd like your critique on this. Back during when I went back and kind of reviewed the 2000 fiasco, when all these stocks, the Ciscos and the Oracles, went flying all the way down. You know, and Cisco was trading 66, and it went down to what, 680 or something. I mean, I'm not anywhere near predicting that, but you need to look at history and say, I don't know who predicted it then, if anybody did, but stuff like that can happen. And I mean, I look at this Micron again. I'm not telling anybody. Who knows? These guys they could be sitting in a gold mine. I wouldn't know. But
well, you think about it. Their price was low.
Well,
you think that Qualcomm is too expensive. So you sell and you jump into something that you think is cheap that might benefit from these trade deals or whatever Trump's doing, and you jump in that. Everybody jumps in it because it's a low price, and they kind of ride it up, and now they're going to jump out of it and go to the next thing.
Right there, but their revenue per share.
It kind of goes back to that GameStop thing. I think there's a lot of people who are doing it like a video game.
Yeah.
Trading, like GameStop.
Well, anyway, what I sort of found when I went back and did the post-mortem on these things in 2000. Yeah, now again, it's a long time ago. It seemed like when some of these stocks got to 10, 11, 12 times revenue per share, they got to the spot where they was not sustainable. Now, I don't think that was the cause.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not talking about income. Because income, you can spend your income if it's a good investment. Income per share, I don't pay that much attention to, although in the long run, you have to. In the short run, I look at the revenue numbers and I say, wait a minute, how can these guys, quadruple revenue? I mean, how can Microsoft double revenue? Look at the size of the place. Well, right now, I've got this Micron, and these guys have been around for a long time. They're a mature company. Their revenue per share is $37. So they're trading like 12 times revenue. 12, maybe 12 and a half times revenue. That is a bleep load.
Yeah,
I mean, if your revenue is 37, now there are people. I'm not saying
maybe the investors are the ones that jump out, and once the investor class jumps out and takes their profits, maybe that triggers all the speculators to jump off the boat too.
Well, it also comes down to the same thing we have regarding gold, silver, and Bitcoin. I mean, at some point, I'm not trying to sound like I'm 100 years old. At some point, whatever it is you buy.
Well, on X, they'd call you a boomer.
Right. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean,
they call me a boomer on X, and I'm Gen X.
But whatever it is you buy, you invest in, let's invest in Ricky's hot dog stand. Now, Ricky's a go-getter, and as soon as he gets enough dough, he's going to buy a second hot dog stand and another hot dog. But if we give Ricky $100,000 a piece, someday, somewhere, but on our $100,000, we expect our investment. For that stock, we expect Ricky to be making $10 a share and sending us a check for 3 or 4 someplace. Yeah. It could be 30 years from
that's
now.
That's true if we care about that, but maybe we only care about what his stock price is doing, okay, so we can sell it.
Well, okay, but And but if you do that, then the flip side of that is you have to sell it. It's the only way you're ever going to get paid.
Yeah. I think that's what's going on.
Well, but,
I think that's
okay. What I'm saying is now, you know, for if you look at Micron, okay, and it's trading right now 442. It's up again today. It's going to be you and I are looking for the day. If we're a bunch of old farts, we're looking for the day where these guys are going to be making $40 a share, right, and sending us a check for 10. Does anybody even believe that's going to happen?
Because I don't think so.
I
think the investors see that it's 12 times, and they're going to jump off, and that causes all the speculators to jump off the boat.
Okay,
I think that's what's going on.
What I'm saying is, how can they make $40 a share?
They can't.
If the revenue is only 37.
They can't.
You can't cut costs down to negative, can you?
Yeah, they can't do it. So I think that's what happens is the speculators jump in on something they think is cheap, a low stock price, and then the investors, when it gets crazy enough, they're going to be the first to leave, and I think the speculators follow.
Well,
I think
okay.
That's what's going on.
Well,
I think it's in Vegas.
I'm not playing puts in there, and I'm not shorting it, but who knows? It could go to 800. But, I mean, I'm saying is when this stuff happens, it just doesn't happen in one area. I mean, if the market were to drop, I think the price of skyboxes go down. I think you're not paying.
It kind of feels like a swarm of bees. They kind of just.
Well, because we were talking yesterday a little bit about there's been these pauses in Major League Baseball and in football. There's been times. I mean, if Hal is the economist, and I'm thinking of paying $8 billion for the Bears, okay, I would in the seat prices average pick a number $100. Before I pay $8 billion in seat prices $100, and the team's making say $200 million a year, which I guess they are $220 million something like that, I would like somebody like you, who knows a few things. Don't know much about snow shovels, but you know a few things.
I needed that snow shovel Sunday.
You sent me the picture, right? You did buy it?
I didn't buy it.
Oh, God. Anyway.
I had to borrow my neighbor's flat garden shovel. That thing is heavy and not very effective. Yeah.
Anyway, so I would want somebody like you to say, don't worry, Chief. Buy the Bears at that number because my Ouija board, anybody knows what that is, says that in 10 years, those ticket prices, given the inflation and everything else, those ticket prices are not going to be $100 a game. It's going to be $1,200 a game. And hot dogs are going to be $15 or whatever the hell they are, or $25. Don't worry. In 10 years, it'll look like you stole the place at $8 billion. Now, either that is going to happen, or you're going to say, I don't know, 10 years from now, it looks to me like the ticket prices are going to be $120. The economy doesn't look so hot. And by the way, you're going to continue writing a check for interest for $400 million when you're only making $200 million and you're toast. I mean, it's people's view of the future, right?
Yeah. Well, see, the thing is we have a central bank that inflates things, right? And the government loves the inflation that the Federal Reserve creates.
Absolutely.
Because it can blame corporations for price increases. When in reality, the price increases are just a symptom of all the money that's being created by the central bank.
But how long can they keep rates below inflation? I mean, right now, I think the inflation is probably 5% in the 30-year rates.
I think it's 5% too, honestly.
So somehow or another, if the 30- and 10-year rate went to 8 or 9, you're not going to see stock market at this level, I don't think. So somehow or another, they've been able to talk the market into thinking there's no inflation going forward. How long can they pull that off? They pulled it off for like 20 years, so I won't say for...
Yeah, it's gonna crumble at some point. And, you know, maybe it starts with, foreigners not buying our treasuries and the Fed having to buy the treasuries indirectly from American banks. I don't know what's going to take, but it can't continue. And I think the only way we can solve this accelerating M2 growth rate is by restoring reserve requirements and get rid of these ridiculous
I would agree.
Capital and liquidity.
I'd bring reserve requirements up to 10% tomorrow. If it was me.
I think that you have to do that because all this money, it's leaking out of the banking system, and the lower the interest rate on reserves rate goes, the more money's going to leak out into these loans, and these loans are going to go to where? It's going to go to these whatever these things are, non-depository financial institutions. That's where the money's going now. And that right there is going to benefit people at the top 5%, and everybody else is going to get crushed by the inflation that's going to come.
So if you were...
And the inflation, the price increases are just a symptom of the problem.
So if you were president, would you run around insulting all the companies that are loaning us all the money to keep us afloat?
No, I wouldn't be doing that. I would be... I wouldn't have locked Russia out of the international payment system. I wouldn't have done that because I think that did a lot of damage. And I think what we're doing now is doing a lot of damage. So, you know, we want to be friends with everybody. And a businessman should know that. So upsetting people like he's been doing is not good for business. We want people to buy our debt, right?
Yeah.
If we piss them off, they're not going to buy our debt. And who's going to buy it? The Federal Reserve indirectly through the American banking system.
Well, the UK has made up the entire $100 billion difference in investment in the U.S. this year from China. Now we don't think they're... No, we think they're idiots too, right? UK.
Yeah.
I really wish I knew the... Did Canada refuse to let this guy have a golf course up there or something? What is this big hard-on with Canada?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I think Trump talks about trade deficits, and we have a huge one with the world,
You know, the average Canadian spends $9,500 on U.S. goods.
Yeah.
The average American spends $1,500 on Canadian. Tell me how they're screwing us.
Yeah. Well, yeah, these trade policies can have a detrimental effect on the one that has the bigger trade surplus, right?
Well, I mean, if I'm living across the border and nobody wants to come across the border and buy my stuff, I'm not happy.
Yeah, I just believe in free markets, and we don't have a free market. We have this neo-mercantilist system that is highly cartelized by government rules and regulation. And the last thing we want the banks to be doing is making loans to only the wealthiest, the richest people so they can buy these assets. We want banks to make loans to people who have good business ideas so they can employ people.
Well, you do and
so,
I do, but obviously...
I think we have to reinstate the reserve requirements and get rid of the...
You do and I do, but obviously they don't, whoever the theys are. Anyway, it was a great picture of the snow, you and Carl.
Oh, man, it's unbelievable here. Yesterday, I had a shovel the snow off the ice. Once I did that, the sun was out. It doesn't matter if it's 33 degrees. Once the snow's out, or the sun's out, the rays will melt the ice, and so I was able to get it cleaned off.
Well,
it's unbelievable here.
Well, good. So
we're probably going to get snow tomorrow. The kids have been out of school, Tom, for like a week and a half. They might be out of school this whole week because we're getting snow tomorrow.
We got 2 days off in my entire school career, and we had 27 inches of snow.
Well, that's Chicago. This is North Carolina, where nobody has shovels.
God. And I'm sure nobody has all-weather tires either.
No, we don't. Yeah. We haven't. One thing we haven't done is we haven't spent any money at the grocery store. I've been using all that food I bought at the Army base down in Fort Bragg back in December.
Well, McDonald's has got to be open.
Yeah, but man, I got all this meat that I bought from the Army base. Man, I went to the commissary, got a bunch of meat, half off.
Don't tell me you got like 40 cans of Spam you've gone through or something.
I don't have Spam. I got like those frozen like tri-tips marinated in various spices. Oh, it's so good.
Anyway, enjoy yourself. Don't wreck your back or something shoveling snow. SP Futures up 13. NASDAQ Futures up 122. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.